Hi Kent, hi.
Yeah, nice to meet you.
Nice to meet you. Firstly, thank you very much for coming to my show.
Yeah, no, pleasure.
So I've gone through your profile. I can see you're working in Microsoft as a product manager. So I thought to tell about the work and the role and responsibility of yours and a little bit of your past experience, which is connected with your present one.
Sure. Yeah, sounds good.
So can you please introduce yourself?
Sure. Hi, everyone. My name's Kent Weir. I'm a principal product manager at Microsoft. I'm working on the Azure Logic Apps team inside of Azure.
You're from Canada.
I am. Yeah, I do live in Calgary, Canada, and I do work with like a Seattle-based team, but I'm able to do that from Canada, which is awesome.
So presently you're working on Logical Apps.
Yep. I've been on this team for about a year. I've been at Microsoft for about 4 years. I've spent the past 3 years in the Power Platform space. So working on Power Automate, which actually runs on top of Azure Logic Apps. And then I also spent a couple years in what's called the CAT team. It's a customer advisory team inside of the Power Platform, working on robotic process automation with Power Automate, and then also Power Virtual Agents, which is a conversational chatbot. So I've really been in this automation space, automation integration, most of my career, and it's generally something I quite enjoy. So that's why I stick around.
Why you like automation?
I don't know. I think it's it goes back to, well, way earlier in my career, I used to do a lot of work with BizTalk Server, which is a Microsoft sort of server-based integration product. And I always kind of liked this idea that you could have these different systems that were designed and developed without even considering what might be connecting to them. And it's really just kind of comes up to your sort of creativity in order to connect them, in order to get some sort of an outcome. So if you think about, like, you know, whether you got like, a payroll system, and then you've got a finance system, and, some other sort of human resources capital management tool. And it's like, you need all of these systems to talk together in order to drive some sort of business benefit for a customer. Being able to enable that is highly rewarding, in part because it allows a business to achieve much more. And it's they're able to achieve it because of this integration, as opposed to like, people manually doing a lot of work, you know, the whole swivel chair, copy paste, you know, between applications, or even worse, just like having data in silos and then not being able to leverage it. So I think it's really an opportunity for customers to be able to go ahead and sort of create new opportunities because they have this data that's been integrated with each other. And I think there's some creativity involved in solving some of these technical problems. So you get to learn a lot about different technologies as well. And I think that's sort of another thing that interests me, is constantly learning, and whether it's like sort of new protocols or new approaches or even just new systems, like SAP is going to do things in a very specific way. ServiceNow does things in a very specific way. Dynamics 365 does things in a very specific way. So it's an opportunity to learn more about those ecosystems as well.
So how much time you spent on technology in your life?
Quite a bit. So I'm kind of mid-career, I would say. And so I've definitely spent, I went to university in Canada taking computer science. And so it was kind of one of those things where when I went to school, I actually started off in like a business track. And then as part of that business track, you take some computer science courses. And then I just liked the computer science aspects to it greater than I did the sort of the other business, the core business courses. And so I had changed my major and got into computer science. And then after that, I spent a couple of years doing like web development. And this was kind of the early days of .NET, so ASP.NET. And while I thought that was kind of cool, like this opportunity to learn BizTalk. So definitely, I'll probably, you know, close to 20 years in my career, I would say now. And most of it's been related to integration, and pretty much all of it's been related to technology. I truly do love it. I can't imagine sort of doing any other field, doing something in like, you know, real estate passively down the road. But it's more, you know, in terms of day to day, I think there's nothing else I'd rather do.
So you started understanding the business side of the technology in your early days, and you also did bachelor's in computer science and engineering, and then you worked on web development. Now you landed at the automation thing. So how is this journey? And there should be some strong reason for you to like do whatever you are doing today.
Yeah, I think I think for me, it's really sort of got started. Like my career, I would say, got kickstarted when I learned BizTalk, BizTalk Server, and BizTalk Server is it's like a 20-year-old product now. It's from Microsoft, but it was one of those things where it was fairly niche at the time. It was one of those things where like there was kind of a fair amount of opportunities to when using it, and I think I was able to like ride that wave. And a lot of other sort of integration specialists, I would say, have ridden that wave, regardless of whether you're doing TIBCO or like webMethods or the SAP tools or even MuleSoft. I was able to sort of ride that wave, but more in the Microsoft ecosystem than these other ecosystems. And I think it just kind of created a lot of opportunities for me because there wasn't a lot of people doing this, but it was highly valuable for these organizations. And I think that just kind of created opportunities for me. Like I started to work at some energy companies. I'm in Calgary, Alberta. Energy is kind of one of the core industries here, and that really sort of gave me this opportunity to work with these companies that were doing interesting things, where this middleware platform became sort of really important in terms of their overall like tool landscape that they had because of all of this important information that was flying across, you know, their network plus trading partners and things like that. So it sort of elevated sort of my role within those organizations, and I really enjoyed doing it. So I spent a lot of time working, blogging. I was able to join the Microsoft MVP program, which was really instrumental in my career because it sort of gave me this platform with Microsoft, but it also allowed me to establish this really strong network with other like-minded people across the world. And that really gave me this opportunity to learn from others as well. And I would really feel like getting involved in a community, and it doesn't have to be the MVP community, it could be any community, whether it's technology or not, I think is really important for people because you will meet like-minded people. If you, as you contribute, you will learn more. And it's sort of the more you give, the more you get back, I feel. And it really sort of will create opportunities for you, whether it's like networking or just learning. And I think like if you're going to be in the technology space, learning is super important. If I like to look at it as kind of a treadmill, you know, lots of people can get on the treadmill and start, but like it's about kind of staying on that treadmill. And if you think about long-term growth, and it's not always easy to do, but I find like that's where you need to be able to take advantage of things like communities where you can continue to learn. And certainly working for employers that embrace community and help support community. So whether that's like giving you time to go to community events, certainly I've had the benefit of being able to travel to some of these conferences, especially pre-COVID, where you can sort of learn these things. But even now with online, right, there's sort of a lot of opportunities to contribute as well. And then you get into things like Discord and Slack and those types of sort of async communities as well. But I think that's probably my biggest tip is like join those communities and then also try to find work environments that sort of support those efforts as well. And it becomes a win-win for both the company you work for, but also you personally.
So can I say you are very logical thinker. That's why the reason after working on different domains and different places, now you landed on a place where things get very fast for automation.
I think so. Yeah, I'd like to think I'm logical anyways. But I think that's, yeah, definitely, like, I think if you think about automation and integration, and I think there's some a lot of similarities between the two of them. But, you know, I like to think of it as like, okay, like, show me your business process kind of on paper, and then let's talk about automating. Because, like, if you can't sort of think of it in those terms, all you're going to do is make a big mess faster. And so I think that you do need to think logically in terms of being able to take like a bigger business problem and break it down into smaller chunks and then be able to map those smaller chunks into some sort of like technical components or technical architecture that you can then go ahead and build upon. And it's one of those things where like I haven't spent as much in RPA, robotic process automation, as I have, say, core integration. But like that really forces you to think logically, because it's almost like, show me what you do manually, right? Like bring up your applications, show me which screens you're hitting, show me which like key or fields you're tabbing or clicking into. What are you putting in there? Then it's like go to like sort of the next application and show me the same thing that you're doing. And it's kind of like you kind of follow that mental model. And then it allows you to kind of like piece these things together. And I think some of the robotic process automation tools are pretty good at recording. So you can even start there and say like, hey, like record what you do on a regular basis. And then you can go ahead and sort of tweak it and basically sort of like, there might be some things where there's older app that has some little nuances that you need to sort of tweak or change some selectors because like the website is doing something a little bit odd and you need to sort of tweak it. But I think that's sort of a very sort of practical and logical flow. And then I think there's another sort of set of tools called like process mining that you can actually do sort of a same idea where it's like, hey, record what you're doing, and then I'm going to show you like the tool will show you what are some of the inefficiencies and where you're spending time, and then be able to kind of zero in and sort of focus on optimization. Because I think automation is also about optimization as well, where it's kind of like if we can remove steps out of the business process because they don't make sense, that's kind of your best bet. That's like your best bang for buck. And then it's focusing on like what exactly we need to do, and then what's the best way to solve that. And that could be using RPA or it could be just integration. But yeah, I think it's basically a progression that you need to think through in terms of like starting with a problem and then getting to an actual solution itself.
So, what is the best way to understand the business problem in order to put it in different parts and solve it in a given time, if it is a big business?
Yeah, and this is I don't know if there's like a single answer here, but I always feel like I would encourage people to really understand the business problem that they're trying to solve. I think sometimes, developers, we want to stay developers and we're kind of like, no, like just give me a spec and tell me exactly what to do. And that's okay. Like, but I also feel like having context about what you're doing is so important. And I think it makes you a better developer as well. And so, and it kind of depends, I think, where you're at in terms of where you're working. Like if you're working for perhaps like a traditional company and you work in the IT department, maybe that's sitting in with like a business analyst as they interview the business stakeholders. And you're basically like learning and listening to what are some of the key problems that the business is going through so that when you're building the solution, you can have some empathy in terms of what they're trying to achieve. And so I'd say like that's kind of one angle. I'd say if you're more in a product type company, like you work for say Microsoft or something like that, and you're an engineer, like the opportunity to pair up with a product manager or even a researcher and sit in with them while they interview customers is another angle as well. And I feel like it's just like by hearing it directly from the people that are most impacted, I feel it gives you in the best situation to solve their problem. Because I feel like, there's lots of good ideas that people have, but if it doesn't quite work for the end user or the end stakeholder, it's not going to be as successful. So, even though your day job might be just, more about heads down coding, trying to understand and getting that context, I think is even more important. And it was something that earlier on in my career, I always took advantage of that because like working in more of these like traditional, IT departments, that was kind of gave me an advantage because at the end of the day, they may not be as concerned about like the latest frameworks, but what they are concerned about is whether or not their business stakeholders are happy and whether or not they're getting the right value from like the projects that they're invested in. So definitely encourage people to learn about that. I think it just makes you more valuable, and I think it gives you more opportunities. Like if you want to like go from like an individual contributor to maybe like a team lead. Or maybe even a manager in those settings, I think understanding that business is going to help set you apart from folks that just know the technical side of this story.
So, how is the product management?
I really like it. I think it's kind of the best job I've ever had, to be honest. And I think it's when I think about product management, I think there's many different aspects to product management, and I think that's kind of why I like it. And typically, you know, at least my experience at Microsoft is that, you know, within a PM team, you might have like 6 to 7 product managers, could be more, kind of depends on the size of the product. Obviously, bigger products, more people. And it kind of gives you an opportunity to kind of carve out a specialty. So for some folks, they might be like really interested in user experiences and user interfaces. And so they tend to work on more of like the front end projects. Other folks may be more analytical, and they may want to do more like this growth hacking where they're constantly looking at telemetry and they're constantly looking for opportunities in terms of how do you grow the service. You might have some folks that are more focused on like, you know, the technical program management side of things, where it's around like, especially if you're talking about cloud scale, where you have to think about, you know, regional deployments and compliance and privacy and things of that nature. And then you might have just other PMs that are focused on just various parts of the product. But I feel like, you know, as a PM sort of, you might have specialties, but you're probably going to be expected to kind of be able to jump through like a lot of those different areas. And I think that's kind of what I like about it, is that no day is the same. It's one of those things where like every day there's a little bit different. I have different aspects to my job that I'm able to sort of achieve. And I kind of you know, clouds and dirt is a saying by Gary Vaynerchuk. And I feel like it's a great saying, where like there's times where you get to be very strategic. You're thinking outwards. You're thinking about what customers need to do, and sort of like, you know, thinking about the vision. And then there's kind of these times in execution where it's like, okay, we've got features in development. You know, I need to sort of dig in and get sort of more hands-on, not hands-on building the product, but hands-on in terms of like ensuring the engineers understand like the scope, ensuring that you've got things lined up for previews, ensuring things you've got lined up with customers to get that feedback, and, you know, creating that feedback loop. And you kind of become, you know, very sort of execution focused. And I find for me, like that ability to kind of do both is really interesting for me, as opposed to like only being in execution all the time, you know, or only being like trying to be strategic, but never actually seeing sort of like the outcome of what you're proposing. And I feel like it's a great balance, and it's something I really enjoy.
And how your previous experiences are helping you to do the project product management better today?
Yeah, that's a great question. And I think everyone takes a different path. And so I want to call that out here. Like, I think this was the path that I took. This might work well for others. You know, others may find a different path, and that makes sense too. I think like for me, because I have this strong background in automation and integration, that was what opened the door for me. You know, I was, you know, when I first joined Microsoft, I was coming in from industry. I had spent a lot of years in the sort of the MVP community, a lot of time working with customers, understanding their use cases, understanding what it, like sort of the needs are of these types of tools. And so when I had the opportunity to interview with Microsoft, it was one of those things where they knew who I was because I had spent so much time in this community. I was considered, well, I don't know, thought leader, that's probably a little strong, but I was seen as at least competent in this specific area. And so as I went into those interviews, it was easier for them to say like, okay, this person understands the problem space that we're interested in. And while I didn't have as much of the product management experience, I did have more of that customer experience, having been a customer, and that domain experience. And I think that's what really helped me get into Microsoft. And so obviously I didn't join Microsoft outside of school, and oftentimes a lot of people join big tech companies. And that's why I'm saying like my path might be different than others. But I feel like if you're really passionate about a specific area at one of these big tech companies, regardless of if it's, you know, Alphabet or Amazon or Facebook or Microsoft, it's like spend some time in those communities, spend some time, you know, learning that technology, learning that domain, joining that community, putting out some content that demonstrates that you know this space. And I feel like that's an opportunity for you to separate yourself from the pack. And once again, that was my path. You know, if you're sort of new out of school, that may not be practical for you, but I feel like for people that have, you know, love specific products that are being built by some of these big tech companies and you want to get in, that's the way I would do it. I would get involved in their community. I would show feedback, give them feedback so that they can see that you're actually interested in this. And then I feel like when you then interview, they have an understanding of you, of who you are already. And I feel like that gives you sort of a leg up on other people that may not have those same experiences.
So what you did in order to make things possible and be in the position where you are today?
So I feel like, yeah, continued learning. I think that's a big thing. Like continuing to sort of stay up on things. And I think like for me, like I've spent a ton of time blogging and I've got a YouTube channel as well. And it's one of those things where like I don't do it for like, you know, the likes or the subscribers or things like that. I think a lot of it is more a forcing function for me to learn. And in turn, that I think helps others as well. And I think that's kind of a win-win. Like if I can learn myself, but as I'm doing it, other people's benefit, perfect. And I think I use it more of a forcing function. I'm kind of a forcing function type person where I'll sign up for basically speaking at a conference if I want to learn something. And it forces me to learn something in order to go ahead and not embarrass myself at that conference. And it's like I'm also into running, and I do this in my running life too, where I will sign up for a half marathon. I will sign up for a 10K, which will force me to get my butt off the couch and actually go ahead and do the training. And so I think those are some like sort of tips I would say, just in terms of like developing skills, and that can apply to anything, learning product management as well. I think another thing that I think that's really benefited me is I was able to spend a couple years on that CAT team, that customer advisory team in the Power Platform. And I feel like that gave me a lot of muscles with respect to customers. I think if you're going to be in a product management role, you need to talk to customers. You need to be able to understand their problems. You need to be able to have empathy for them. And you don't get that by just reading comments, right? There's kind of a skill and an art of like being able to talk with customers and walk them through interviews and understand their perspectives. And that's not always easy because sometimes customers they may not be happy. And so it's you know, you have to sort of balance the, you know, not every conversation's going to be fun, but you have to sort of develop some of those skills. And I feel like if you're not working with customers as you're building your product, I would really question how successful your product's going to be. And so that's another angle. And so I think like for folks that may be coming from other areas, like maybe you're in consulting or maybe you're in customer support and you're trying to get into product management, those are great skills to have because like you're going to need those skills as you become a product manager. And I think the more comfortable you are with talking to customers, the better the product that you're going to build. So I think that's another thing is as people are sort of looking to improve on their skills, is that's another angle that sort of you can always be better at, I feel like.
So, in your present job, is there any particular part or on any task that you are doing which is squeezing your maximum potential?
Sorry, squeezing my which potential?
Your maximum strength or bringing out your skills off?
Oh, okay. So I feel like there's it's a lot of things I would say. Like for example, last night we had a presentation to our MVPs. We have a sort of a as part of the MVP program, we'll have these kind of like meetups with our MVPs where we'll go ahead and demonstrate sort of like early sort of workings of product features as a way to get feedback. And it was one of those things where I used to be on the other side of those calls, like a few years ago, where it's like I would look forward to these calls and joining them to see what's coming and then be able to provide feedback. And so it was kind of like last night was kind of the tables had turned in respect that now I'm going and I know what these folks are expecting out of this session. So I want to make sure that I'm delivering the type of session that these folks are happy with. And so it was a lot of fun last night. It was kind of like some of the folks that, you know, I've known from the past, but asking really good questions. And it's like, oh, yeah, I forgot. Like, yeah, you always ask good questions. And it's kind of interesting to be on the other side of it. So I feel like that was sort of a thing like that that helps me. I feel also like in terms of like being a prior customer myself, like I feel like some of the areas I'm working on today are around like monitoring and telemetry and how do customers sort of use our product and deal with like the operational side of our product. So when you have failures that are going back and forth and how do you sort of like know that your performance of your platform is operating correctly? And it's like, I've been on the other side of that as well, where, you know, things don't go necessarily the way you want them to. And you've got a business unit that's like, has expectations about uptime and, you know, transactions being successful. And it's like being able to like put on that hat as like the customer and then try to like design and sort of, like invest in our products to help address kind of those needs, I feel is another thing, strength that I can bring to the table because I've got that prior experience. And that's where I feel like that empathy is so important, because if you can kind of envision yourself in their shoes and thinking about like, what does this mean to them? I feel like that helps you build better products too.
And change is constant. So how you are able to adapt to the change?
Change is constant, yeah. And I think that's sometimes harder than it's hard, like, because like, you know, there's no question we're always busy, and you know, you've always got kind of a fairly healthy plate of things you need to get done as part of your core job. How do you keep up on things? And for me, like, what I like to do is I like to stay plugged in and have awareness of what's going on. Like, I just don't have the time to go deep in every different section. And I feel like that's why sort of social media is so important, right? So I think that's where I would start. I would look at specific areas that you're interested in and follow thought leaders in that space. And then being able to sort of like, kind of like passively consume that content so that you know that it exists. So that when a time comes where you run into this situation and you're like, I've seen this before, and you now need to know where to go look, I feel like that's interesting. And that's something that I try to do. So it's whether it's like subscribing to people on YouTube, following people on Twitter, following people on LinkedIn, that's a great thing. There's a little bit of a shout out to a friend. His name's Richard Sirotter. You might want to have him on your show. He works for Google, but even though he's in the Google space and his interests are a little bit different than mine, I do have a tremendous amount of respect for him. And so if he's tweeting something, I'm usually listening, because I kind of feel like he's vetted a lot of this stuff out previously. And so like recently he's just started up a newsletter where every day he posts about sort of things that he's read that he's found interesting. And so I saw that right away and I subscribed to it, and I'm like, okay, so every day I take a look and see what Richard's up to. And yeah, some of it's not, you know, relevant to me because he lives in Google land and I'm in Microsoft land, but there's a lot of these like intersection type posts. It's one of those things where it's like, yeah, if he's talking about it, I'm listening. And I feel like that's just one example. I would say, like, you know, there's countless number of sort of people that sort of are genuinely thought leaders and experts in their field. And it's more of like tapping into what they're doing. And it kind of makes you a little bit more productive, because instead of you always having to go search for these things, then it's able, like, the content comes to you as opposed to you going to look for it. Now, obviously you got to be careful. Like, you know, some folks may not have as much substance and they're influencers and they're getting paid to spread specific messages. So naturally you need to sort of balance some of that as well. But find the right people, follow them, see what they're interested in. Basically read it, even passively understand that it's there, and then as time or opportunities emerge, then revisit it and then be able to go deeper. That's kind of the way I've looked at it.
You worked on the customer side of the technology. You understood the user experiences and how they see and use things. Now you are working on the product development or management of the product. So how this technology product or services are helping mankind and solving their problems?
The well, and I think that's why I'm a big believer in like co-development. And what that means is that like you do need to have some customers that are kind of ride or die. And I mean that in a positive way, right? Like where it's kind of a two-way street. Like there's gonna be some customers that they want to make a strategic bet on you. You naturally want customers that use your product and get value from it and love it. And so there's going to be some of these customers that you just need to establish these strong relationships with and be able to build a lot of trust so that they kind of open the doors and they go in and they show you sort of like exactly what they need and sort of why they need it and, you know, give you that understanding of the prioritization of it. And then on the flip side, like you need as you're building the product to be able to do the same thing where you open the doors, you open the hood of the car and you show them, you know, this is what we're doing and you get that feedback. And naturally you don't want to have always the same sort of small group of customers. I think you do want some diversity from that perspective, but you can't build a product for everyone at one time, right? So you do need to be able to collect these signals and sort of synthesize these and try to find that balance of what is provides the biggest impact for the, you know, the most amount of customers itself, but you have to have those signals. And so there's different types of programs that a lot of customers or companies use, like customer advisory type boards. And those are sort of great sounding boards where you can bring customers in that are truly invested in your product and have these rich, generally, you know, NDA, non-disclosure agreement type conversations about what you're doing in order to capture some of that like raw, unfiltered feedback. And that's where that trust comes because you want them to be as honest as possible. But on the flip side, as a product team, you have to take that feedback constructively. You can't be offended by it. So you do need to have like these healthy relationships and to create these programs where you can bring these customers in the right setting and get that feedback. And then in turn, like listen, prioritize, deliver, and then be able to come back to that group and say, hey, we got a lot of great feedback from you folks. You know, this is what we did. You know, these are the things that, you know, we felt would provide the biggest value. And then these are the things that didn't make the cut line because there's naturally going to be a cut line where you just can't do everything you want to. But being able to be transparent about how you got to that is another one of those opportunities to build a lot of trust with those customers as well.
So give me some tips as a person who is into automation and who is doing automation and playing with the servers and making servers to do certain tasks, because I'm DevOps engineer as well. I'm doing the same thing. I'm learning right now. I'm in a learning stage. There will be a lot of people who is into this servers management and working on making new things. So what you have learned? And what mindset will help?
Well, I think the good news with like our technology stack, and not everyone's kind of the same, it all kind of depends, but we've got a very low barrier of entry. And so there's kind of like no substitute for just trying. And so like being able to go and spin up a trial, whether like that's Power Automate more in the automation space or whether you're in Azure and you've got like the Azure Logic apps is go ahead and explore. I think number one. And then I think number two is like there is a lot of content that is out there. Microsoft Learn is a great sort of resource for starting out where there might be some like tutorials and that you can walk through. And it's basically like a learning path or a learning journey. And so it's easy for you to follow along and get sort of your, you know, some experience, get your hands dirty with the tools themselves. And then from there, then it's kind of like, okay, now branching out. What are other people doing? And, you know, what's some of this other content that might be being created in the community, in order to go ahead and take advantage of that. So it's something that, you know, people can do very cost effectively. Those learning paths are free. Like there's no charge for those. And, just get started with it, I feel is kind of the best thing. There's no kind of you know, you don't want to get into analysis by paralysis or paralysis by analysis type things where you're just, you know, just read a bunch of stuff and then never actually try it. For me, I'm more of a hands-on person. I need to touch something. I need to feel it. And I feel, at least with our platform, that low barrier of entry allows you just to go ahead and try it. And I think there's no substitute for that.
I can understand you are expert in both the things, talking with human beings, also talking with the computer. So how you are good at both?
I don't know. I think, you know, generally it's one of those things where kind of where you put your effort in, that's where you'll sort of get sort of the rewards after it. I feel like I do consider myself more of an introvert, but it's one of those things where just knowing when to be sort of effective, you sometimes have to put yourself out there a little bit. And like I talked about forcing functions, I feel like I've got a pretty good balance of being able to communicate and talk to people and understand what they're trying to do. And then I feel like I've got some decent technical skills. You know, you don't want me sort of being an engineer on this product. There's people that are far better at it than me. And I've kind of felt like that's kind of where I can provide the most value, is kind of being a little bit of a bridge and trying to understand sort of people and sort of the use cases, and then still having some technical skills that I can then help engineering and designers with vision about how we want to solve it. But, you know, to each their own. I think everyone needs to play to their strengths. That's kind of the biggest thing I would tell people is there's nothing wrong. Like, if you're really an introvert and you want to be focused on technical things, double down on that. Like, if you want to be more sort of maybe say on the evangelism side or advocate side, or maybe your technical pre-sales, and then go for it. Like, but I feel like doubling down on your strengths is super important. It's another sort of Gary Vaynerchuk sort of theme that I do believe in, as opposed to trying to be sort of mediocre at everything. Like, find the areas that you're good in, double down on that, and then find people that complement you. And I really feel like as people try to assemble teams, that's the most important thing. And I think when I gave you that example of how product management teams are generally assembled, you've got people that have different strengths. And I feel that's the right way to go. I don't think you want everyone that's average in everything. I think you want people that are like really passionate about specific areas. And then how do you partner those people up to like then complement perhaps their weaknesses or things that they're not as interested in, that but someone else is. And I feel like that's another strength as well. So find what you're good at, double down on it. And I wouldn't be as worried about the things that you're not as good at, but just find areas or opportunities where you can play to your strengths.
So coming to Azure services, how it is able to solve problems of the non-technical people, and also non-technical people also are able to understand the Azure services today. So what kind of background work that Azure is doing in order to understand the user experiences and make them use the services better?
Yeah, and this is where it's quite interesting. So like if we just take a practical example. So if you think about like BizTalk Server, it was a more complicated product or platform to use. And you generally had to take a lot of training in order to be productive, even to do some simpler things. And don't forget, like this is like, you know, 15, 20 years ago, this product was born. So it's not a knock. It was more of like at the time, that was kind of the reality. If we think about like Azure Logic Apps today, it solves a lot of the same problems that BizTalk Server solves. But I would say one of the key differences is that lower barrier of entry. And it's one of those things where, you know, Azure Logic Apps, it is cloud-based workflow. So it is like drag and drop, if you will. It's very visual. It's very graphical. So if you think about how you would model a business process in like a Visio diagram or some sort of flow chart, you can kind of think of it along the lines there, where you can just go ahead and drag and drop shapes onto this canvas and be able to then use connectors. And I would say connectors is another like really big productivity gain for people, and helps lower that barrier of entry, where it's like, hey, I know I want to send an email, but I don't know what like technically how to do that. So it's as easy as like going into a side panel and searching for like email or Outlook, and then being able to say, oh, here's an operation called Outlook, click on it, or send email, click on it. And then it's like you get prompted, what are the fields that you need to provide? Oh, a to, a subject, a body. And then you can easily go ahead and almost as if you were in Outlook itself. Now, if you think about like how you might approach that otherwise. There's obviously like Outlook APIs that a developer could write and call. But what we've done is kind of package that functionality up and built an experience on top of the underlying API that allows anybody to go ahead and send that email, whether you're like less technical or even if you're very technical. It's kind of like, which is faster? It's just like adding that connector, populating the from, the subject and the body, or reading an API doc, then figuring out the authentication, then figuring out all of the operations and the sort of the parameters that you have to provide. And I feel like that's what we've really done is we've built experiences on top of a lot of these APIs with the goal of bringing more people to the party, or just improving productivity for people that are more technical. And I feel like in the past doing integration, I've spent so much time trying to figure out like authentication and security schemes for these different services. And so much of that is just taken care of for you. And you don't think about as much plumbing, but what you are able to do is to focus more on solving the business problem. And I think that's kind of been one of our core goals with Logic Apps is making it simpler, bringing more people to the party, lowering the barrier of entry. And I think those are a couple areas that we've been able to achieve that.
How to be successful as a product manager?
How to be successful as a product manager? So I feel number one, customers. Like you've got to be listening to customers. You've got to be, like I said, interacting with them, two-way street, you know, not just collecting feedback and not, you know, showing them the sort of coming back with them to get feedback. I think prioritization is another sort of skill or muscle you need to develop. There's going to be no shortage of asks. People are going to have all these asks. They're going to come from various places like sales team, VIP customers that talk to like VPs and say, hey, we really need this. Could be through like feedback forms or idea generation online. Could come from support tickets. And so what you really need to then be able to say is like, okay, well, we've got more demand or more requests than we can reasonably fill. And so you need to prioritize it. And I think not always or easier said than done, but I think what's super important is having principles that help you then prioritize those inbound requests. And generally how you want to align those principles is to some sort of strategic goals, because ultimately what you're doing should align to those strategic goals. But I think spending some time as a team and saying, what are our principles for prioritization? Is really important. And I've seen some teams at Microsoft do this like extremely well, and it makes the planning process very, very clean and very optimized. And I also feel like it helps give customers some clarity, like for better or for worse. I think there's nothing worse than having a customer in limbo because they don't know if you're actually going to take that feedback serious. So I feel like that's really important. I feel like communication is another thing that's super important. You're going to be communicating. It's going to be like, whether it's other stakeholders, like the field, like customer support, whether it's your peer product managers, right? Like, you know, the left hand needs to know what the right hand's doing. I think another example is engineering, right? You're going to have to be communicating sort of the vision about the feature and what you're trying to achieve and why you're trying to achieve it. And then being able to like ensure that they've got a good understanding of what's trying to be built. And then depending upon where you're at, there's going to be some level of sort of tracking required in terms of making sure that you've got you're on track to deliver it for like a specific schedule that you're trying to achieve as well. So those would be there's more, but those would be some of the things that are definitely really important and definitely things that I would typically prioritize over perhaps some of the other things.
So 3+ years you are into Microsoft. Before that, you worked in different places and different products. So after coming to Microsoft, what is that change that you are observing in yourself?
Let's see. I think maybe the customer side of things is certainly something I would have never sort of envisioned being as involved in. And I think having those conversations, that's one area. I feel like what I really like about product management is some of the strategic aspects of it, where like being able to shape sort of the product, the vision for the product. And obviously you're doing that as a team, you know, not just as an individual, but I feel like that's sort of an area that I really do enjoy that perhaps I didn't. I would say in the past, one of the downfalls of sort of working for maybe some of these traditional IT companies is that, like, if you want to grow your career, you typically have to go through a management track. And I've done that. And, you know, while I've enjoyed working with like so many people, it's not necessarily where I always want to spend my time. And I feel like working for a technology company still sort of allows you for tremendous amount of career growth without necessarily having to be in a management track. And so I think that's sort of another sort of area where it's been, you know, refreshing, even though I've had some leadership responsibilities at Microsoft in prior roles. It's still just been different than perhaps in some of these, you know, traditional IT environments as well. And so I feel like working for a tech company, where tech is the business, is something that I've really enjoyed. And I think that's one of the key differences between being in an IT department where your business is typically something else, whether it's, you know, manufacturing or if it's finance or if it's healthcare or, energy. You know, where you're kind of a supporting service versus working for a technology company where, like, you are the business, you are in the business. And I feel like that is liberating in many regards, and something that I've really enjoyed.
So working for a top technology company in the world, and how is that? How is this responsibility?
It's great. It does come with some pressure, I would say. That's for sure. What I would say is, like, the type of people I've worked with at Microsoft have been just absolutely outstanding. You know, sometimes you literally pinch yourself going, like, wow, like, there's so many smart people around here. But I think the other thing that I would say just generally is, you know, I can't say I've run into a lot of jerks. You know, I think that there's definitely, you know, sometimes you run into people with, like, a lot of egos and people that aren't sort of team oriented. I think I've been very fortunate to work on teams, both in the Power Platform and also here in Azure Logic Apps. We're part of what's called DevDiv, where there's just a lot of good people. And even though they're incredibly smart, they're very respective. And I feel like, you know, people are generally trying to live by, like, the growth mindset where, you know, you do get feedback. But it's constructive and people are doing it in sort of the best interests of both you and the company. And I feel like that's been sort of, a real bonus. You know, I can't say I've only worked in sort of two areas inside of Microsoft, but I've been at least fortunate to experience, like, a lot of positivity from that perspective.
So at last, what do you say about, my work as a technologist?
Oh, I think it's awesome. I think I saw the, you know, all of the people that you've interviewed, and it's quite impressive. And I feel like, you know, good on you. I think what you're going to find by doing all of these videos is, like, you're going to learn a ton. And so I think this is the opportunity, I think, for your subscriber base as well, is to go along for the ride. And I think it's really impressive what you've done, and keep at it, because I feel like, who knows, maybe the next Joe Rogan, we'll see. But it's pretty cool, and kudos to you for, you know, for putting yourself out there. I think that's kind of the big thing. You know, at first I did a lot of blogging, and I was, like, a little bit, you know, I guess shy about doing the YouTube thing. And I'm like, ooh, I don't know, like, I'm going to be sort of, like, putting myself out there and opening up myself for criticism. But I feel like what happens over time is you develop a lot of confidence and thick skin. But I feel like once you're confident, you kind of, you know, experiment and sort of know you're on the right path. And you'll see that through other positive compliments or subscribes or likes and just growth. And then it's sort of, you don't worry about those things as such. And so that would be something I would encourage others to do as well, where it's like, if you're concerned about putting yourself out there, yes, there are times there's some negativity, but I think the benefit far outweighs it. Hopefully you sort of see the same thing of sort of your journey, but keep doing what you're doing. It's definitely cool. And it's pretty cool when I was looking through your videos to see, like, oh, just who's been on this show and the diversity, like, whether it's from different companies, different parts of the world, different backgrounds, people coming all from different angles. So kudos to you. I think it's pretty cool what you got going here.
I did what you already did in your technology career. You have understood the user experiences and also understood how people talk and how to listen to them. Now you are into automation, you are working with computers, as well as took the big responsibility for product management. So as a person who already did this, tell me how this, whatever I'm doing this now, how this is going to be helpful for me. I'm also a DevOps engineer, AWS DevOps engineer. So how this will help me in coming days in my tech career?
I think, well, number one, talking to people, right? And listening. I think listening is a skill in itself in terms of being able to pull out the right pieces of information. I feel like by just talking so much with the camera on, I think is also really beneficial as well. Like, I feel like the more I sort of create YouTube videos, the more I speak at conferences, the better I get. And I feel like that's another thing that like you're going to benefit from as well, because it's just like, you know, having presence, being able to communicate effectively, those are all skills to have. And I think more on the technical side of things, I think what you're going to find is that as you talk to more people, you're going to get those perspectives. And then you're going to be able to like, hey, I didn't know about that. And then, like, oh, I need to look into that. And then you're going to look into that and go, wow, that actually helps me. So it kind of goes back to a little bit of that analogy where I said, like, I like to sort of observe and sort of like taste things and sort of like sample things and sort of get awareness of things. And then I can choose to dive deeper. And I think by you talking to so many people, there's going to be some nuggets, golden nuggets that people provide you where you're like, wow, I need to look into that. And then, you know, basically dive in.
And the content that you create, I will share those links to my audience as well. People who are following me will see the work that you're doing, can able to learn from you.
Yeah, no, I definitely appreciate that. And thanks a lot for having me on the show. And all the best as you continue on this journey.
Thank you again. Can you share your social media presence or your content details to my podcast listeners?
For sure. And we could probably link them as well. But yeah, you can find me on YouTube, like youtube.com/Kent Weir, one word. On Twitter, I'm at Weirsy, W-E-A-R-S-Y. And then certainly feel free to find me on LinkedIn, Kent Weir. I'm sure you won't find any others, but yeah, you'll be able to find me on LinkedIn as well.
Thank you again, Kent. Can I put this video on my YouTube channel, podcast, website, internet, social media, everywhere with your permission?
Oh, yeah. Yep. Go for it.
Yeah. Keep going. Keep inspiring like this.
Yeah. No, thank you. And same to you as well.
Thank you, sir.
Okay. Thanks. I got to jump, but bye. Thanks again. Bye.
Thank you. Bye.